The Retirement Conversation focuses on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join Joe and Dennis and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who have created interesting second acts. You'll take away practical ideas and tips to create your own. At Retirement Wisdom, we as retirement coaches help people think through their transition into retirement, as well as those who are in the early part of retirement but are looking for more from this stage of their lives. To find out more about us and how we can help you, you can schedule a free, no-obligation consultation with us. Simply go to retirementwisdom.com. On the top left corner, click on Get a Free Consultation. We would welcome the opportunity to speak to you. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the new season of the Retirement Conversation. Today's conversation is with Stan Corey. Stan retired from his financial planning firm in August 2018 after almost 40 years of providing independent financial advice to individuals and closely held businesses. He has been a certified financial planner, a chartered financial consultant, and a certified private wealth advisor. Mr. Corey also has completed the Harvard Negotiation Institute Negotiation Workshop at Harvard Law. He has served as past president of NVMS in Fairfax, Virginia, and co-wrote and taught a course for mediator certification called Economic Issues in Divorce, and has served on many local community service organizations' board of directors. He published a book in January 2016, The Divorce Dance, a novel about a couple going through divorce where the woman teaches the reader about the financial, emotional, and legal issues involved as she researches her options. It became a bestseller on Amazon. His second book, When Work Becomes Optional, was released in July 2018 and is receiving wide acclaim for his ability to present many topics facing all retirees as they move through their retirement stages and breaking down complex issues to be more understandable. Stan, thanks for joining us today. Is there anything else you'd like to add to your bio?
No, that's great. A little more extensive than I even needed. I was trying to remember if I could recognize that guy.
We like to be thorough. Mr. Casey.
So Stan, in your second book, you point out that many people reach a point where asset accumulation is no longer the primary focus. Work becomes optional, and there's a shift toward what you describe as emotional wealth. How do people become emotionally wealthy?
Well, I think I can start earlier than the time we reach retirement. Again, it's people, if you're fortunate enough to either work in a position where you enjoy your work, and it, as I say, following passions is really a critical component. To me, people, especially today, chasing the gold ring, and it's sometimes difficult to attain, or your life not very enjoyable along the way. So if you're fortunate enough at some point where work becomes optional, means that you're working purely for the goal of the enjoyment of the work and following a passion and not making money the object of your decision to work. So it's really a time where you have the ability to enjoy yourself in a more comprehensive way and holistic way. And it's a body, mind, soul thing. And I think life becomes different for you at that stage.
Retirement's often thought of and actually even planned for as if it's just a singular phase of life, just one thing. What are the multiple phases of retirement that you see?
Well, that's the key. Retirement is really not the goal or the end zone, you know, as we talk about. It's really the half time of your life or the reaching the 50-yard line, because basically getting to retirement is more difficult and challenging for people who are in a higher level of executives or professionals than it is for the average person. A lot of the average, you know, blue-collar middle management, they worked hard their lives. They reached retirement as a goal and celebrate it. They once buy a lot of RVs and travel in caravans with family and friends and have a good time. As you go up the ladder with all of the pressures that go on and careers that people take, many times they face an identity crisis because you have been that executive, that vice president, president, lawyer, doctor, financial planner, whomever. And many people will identify themselves as such. If they are asked, what do they do? They'll say, I am. And as soon as they say, I am, they have that identity issue. And so I find that any crisis for higher income earners is a huge thing in the transitioning into retirement. And then after you go through, and the transition for some is getting used to the idea there's no more paychecks. They, you know, how do I refer to myself when somebody asks, what do? I'm retired. I'm a retired such and such, or we talk about who you are versus what you did. And so the transition period for some is short. Other people can take a year or more to, you know, get through a transition period and come to grasp with the idea of not working on a day-to-day basis. Plenty of stories out there. I've known people that I've interviewed and so forth, that one gentleman who was the president of a company, they planned the replacement, and the day he actually retired, the next day he got up and was getting dressed to go to work, and his wife had to remind him this is not going to work anymore. And he opened up his computer, it was a blank screen, scared the hell out of him. So it was hard for him to do anything because he had no schedule, and every day was fully scheduled before. Transitioning is one of the most challenging periods in retirement. And then from there, I think everybody goes through different stages. And again, I base this on stages, not ages, because people can retire sometimes in their 50s and others will retire in their 70s or later. So this is all based on the different stages that everybody goes through. The difference is that each stage may be a different length of time or a different period, depending on the variety of other circumstances. So after you survive the transitioning and acceptance into your retirement and following the path that you wish to follow, we go through what I call a go-go period, which is a lot of fun times, and you're healthier and traveling, and then you go to a slower go, and then you go to a no-go, and then you go to an exit kind of a strategy. So each of those stages everyone follows, and it's their challenges in each one of them, but there are also lots of fun things that can happen and lots of enjoyment through those stages.
Stan, do you find that the challenges people face are unique to any particular profession, or is it pretty much across the board, depending on what a person does for a living? How does that impact it?
Well, I think that the transition is probably more impacted by what your, you know, work has been, your profession. As I said, I think the transitioning seems to be more difficult for the higher incomers. I have other people who just can't let go of that. And I know a gentleman who's in his late 70s, another president of a company, says basically, I asked him about retirement. He says, you know, that's not a word that he thinks of. He says, I'll stop working when the board of directors thinks I'm no longer of value. And I felt bad for him. That's, you know, putting your value based upon your position. It's hard. So a lot of times I think that people who are more modest in their working careers, I think they have a little easier time in that transition. But after that, pretty much it's very similar, you know, because it's all based on activities, your health, a lot of other factors that will impact the other four stages. You know, how long of a go-go period do you have? I mean, some people have a, you know, even if they retire at 70, may live to very healthily until they're 90 and then see a transitioning. But most people see it's a progression, and I think that each one of those stages that everyone faces provides different challenges for them. Again, within it depends on their family circumstances, their partner's health, support, extended family scenarios. It's very different for someone that doesn't have children or someone that has 10 children, or someone that's children don't live nearby, or they've moved away, or their parents have moved away. Go down to Naples, Florida, and find out their kids are in California. Tough to take care of them.
So how can people figure out if they're ready to retire?
Well, it's another it depends issue, but I think basically what we've done with people is to say, you know, you get to a point when the work becomes optional or retirement, is that you have accumulated sufficient assets along with whatever benefit plans you have. Some people still, especially in government, have pensions, or other types of employment may have some pensions. There are fewer and fewer pensions out there. But the combination of what you've accumulated through 401ks or other savings accounts, personal investments, or even building equity in a house or something like that, all of those things come together and you determine how much income will be provided. But I usually go backwards into that, and that is, first I want to sit down with people and understand what are their current living expenses and what are those expenses going to look like after they retire. And many people will find their expenses will go down for a while after retirement, because they're, number one, not contributing to Social Security or 401ks or other things, so their net income can be maintained even though their income has dropped, because they're not contributing to those things and not paying as much taxes. So they can maintain their current standard of living, you know, with their expenses. So we look at the expenses, I call it a spending plan versus a budget. And so you develop a spending plan, and then you say, okay, how are you going to support that spending plan? What resources are going to be tapped into? And you develop what I call a distribution plan, which is understanding the various resources and the tax components of each of those, so that you can blend them in a way to minimize taxes and preserve the income for as long as possible.
And what are the non-financial pitfalls that you've seen your clients grapple with, and how can they be avoided?
Well, on the non-financial issues really come into the area of health and sometimes what I would call expectations. So obviously someone's health has a major impact. One partner or other has an illness or is debilitated in some way, that changes the program dramatically. Certainly death of a partner early or late divorce. Divorce rates are actually popped up from 65 to 70-year-olds right now. You find out what's the old kind of saying of we got married for better or worse, but not for lunch.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're 24-7 together, all of a sudden you realize that this is what weekends and nights were okay, but 24-7 becomes a challenge, and it's interesting to see how that pans out. So those kind of things can have impacts. And basically, again, what I try to get people to do is to look at what their thoughts are about their retirement individually and as a couple if they're married or a partner, so that these expectations can be discussed in advance. And so I give them quizzes sometimes to do ahead of time and then sit down and talk about their answers together. And so sometimes you have some very different feelings about what comes out in expectations that the two don't align at all. Other times they align very well. So I think it comes down to really taking the time to think about, you know, what your vision of retirement is and have that conversation in advance and work on that. Will have a significant impact on your happiness in retirement and not just about the money.
I'm curious, what surprised you most about your own transition to retirement?
What surprised me most was that I was, with all of this time I've done this for all these years and helping so many people, is like I said, man, these things really do feel this badly. Yet transition is tough. And, you know, the idea of no paycheck. I sit down and develop a whole big spreadsheet and do my own distribution planning and the whole thing. And realizing my wife is saying to me, you know, she's read parts of the book. She says, well, what are we taking these quizzes? So it was, I found it, I'd say the first couple of months was very challenging because I was struggling with the idea that, for me, particularly, I think I am very passionate about my work, very passionate about the things I've sold to. And not meeting with clients was really tough. I still have communication with a number of clients, good number of people. They've been very kind and we continue to communicate. But they've even stated to the people I've left behind to handle them, the comments always is, you know, they're great, but it's not you. And it's taken them a while. They're going through a transition is what I realized, of not having sitting down with me anymore. And as well as a withdrawal from the business is part of the challenge I face. I feel much better now, but the first few months were more challenging than I thought they were going to be.
We've heard analogies. One of the analogies that I've used is time, and especially if you've been very active in work, time in can be synonymous to like jumping off of a treadmill. You're at a particular pace and you haven't slowed it down, or you've been continuing to ramp up your whole life, and then all of a sudden you just stop and you jump off. It sounds like in the transition you have, even though you've had some challenges in the first few times, it sounds like you've reached a kind of like a happy medium or a balance, maybe is the word I'm looking for. As you still stay involved in various activities today through the book writing, does that sound fair?
Yeah, I think that I am blessed in that way. You know, part of why I even started to put the first book together a number of years ago was the idea that maybe I could start putting some things down on paper that would make sense and share it, and it would give me something to pursue in a way, because I've been asked many, many times over my career, you know, for resources or books that people could read about these things, and I realized there was bits and pieces in a lot of places, but there were very few places where you could get a good primer, which is what I think of the Work Becoming Optional book is the primer on retirement. The starting place. The divorce book was more definitive in talking about specific concepts and ideas and trying to educate somebody, because, you know, unless you get divorced multiple times, most people go into the divorce world blind and they're just like a deer in the headlight. And so I found that trying to help people understand the consequences before they signed off on an agreement was really critical. So I got motivated in a few different ways like that, and I think part of it was other professionals who are really passionate about their work. It's something it's hard to hang up overnight, and so I think I'm enjoying this role now of hanging out and still consulting in specialized projects and enjoying talking to people like you.
And I don't think we covered this in your bio, but one thing I read about you is another passion you have is sailing, including at a championship level. Talk a little bit about sailing and the things you've done there.
Well, yeah, that's another one of those passion things. And I was fortunate to grow up in New York sailing on the Long Island Sound in New England and then got down to Virginia and the Chesapeake Bay in the 70s. And I raced competitively up in New York at a little club there and won a bunch of stuff. And then I came down here and Navy brought me to the Virginia area. My joke is I won the Vietnam lottery, and so I had a choice of going there or going to continuing education with the Navy at Bethesda, Maryland. So I took that option, and my whole career of the Navy was Bethesda, Maryland and Pax River, Maryland. So it didn't go too far. But when I got to the Pax River and the CO found out what I could do with a sailboat, I started getting orders to represent the base and racing. And then I went up to the Naval Academy and surprised a lot of people as the lowest-ranked person there. And beat it and won the Navy Sailing Championship in 74. And then when I got out in 76, I got to continue on as a volunteer ocean coach, racing coach for the Academy. And that was a lot of fun. Did that for about 6 years. But sailing, and I was able to connect my sailing with the financial world. And that was that I talked a lot about helping when I help people is, by the way, when I was asked what I do, I always say what I do is I try to help people make better financial decisions. And I never use the term of I am a financial planner. I just always felt that was my role was to advise and help people make difficult decisions. And so sailing is very much like that. I always describe, you know, going down the Chesapeake Bay, I think it's rare that you could go from Annapolis down to the Rappahannock River without ever tacking. So the idea of sailing to people and knowing how to find safe harbors in storms or shorten sails or batten the hatches, all these things I've had to do at different times. Having a freight train behind you in the middle of the ocean with a 20-foot wave, it's a different feeling. So it's that independence of it, but it's also preparing properly, the safety things you do. I think way back when, I actually was back in the 80s, I had someone draw up some fun pictures of when I gave a talk to an insurance group of saying, describing financial planning in the early stages, and I said, you know, I showed a sailboat, and I said, you know, if you're a bank, you have a really big, huge hull, it's safe and secure with all the CDs and everything, and a little tiny sail. If you were a life insurance person, you had a huge life ring with a little tiny sailboat poking out around the life ring. You know, you hopefully hit a rock and die and everything's great. Or if you were a stockbroker, you had a huge sail and a little tiny hull, a boat would do really well, but in storms it could easily capsize. And I talked about developing a balanced sailboat, having a good safe hull, enough little life ring, a nice sail, but it had to be balanced. And that was sort of how I described planning, is finding the balance in one's life. And so to me, that's what my career's been about, is helping people find balance in their overall life on a holistic basis.
And we're recording this at the beginning of a new year. And what was the most important thing you learned last year about life and retirement?
Well, my retirement was only 4 months last year. So I did write a note out. Actually, it's really funny. My wife was like, woke up and said, "What are you doing?" I think it was New Year's Day night. I think I couldn't sleep. It was like 12 o'clock at night on New Year's Day, getting into the second day. And I got up and I wrote an article. And I said, my first New Year's in retirement. And it was basically saying, hey, you know, it's a totally different kind of thought. In the past, as a, you know, my work, every year at the end of the year was a challenge to try to hit the numbers. And one of the things that my wife used to tell me was I got depressed a lot of times around the end of the year. And I said, well, part of the depression was, you know, you'd be happy I was hitting my numbers or doing better than I did before, or, you know, showing improvement in my work and so forth. But then I would come back and go, can I do it again? I got to face this all over again.
Yeah.
The New York Times was kind of depressive. Thinking, oh no, I got to start from zero. This is the first year I didn't have to start from zero. So it was a different feeling.
Well, I'm also impressed because the percentage of people awake at midnight on New Year's Day is low. So you're already ahead of many.
You missed the challenge. So there's other challenges today for you. And so having a challenge at the end of the next year kind of gets you going. But I liken it to if you're retired, there's other types of challenges that you present yourself with, but most of them, I think, become more personal versus more you're part of a company and everything like that. It seems like you've been able to morph yourself into creating your own personal challenges outside of work. And from the things you do in your biography, the things we talked about in your biography, it seems like you've successfully been able to establish some new challenges for yourself. How do you feel about that stuff?
So I think that's fairly accurate. I think everybody has to set what, you know, motivates them or challenges them or what things that they may have other types of goals. You know, when I think of general goals beyond spending time enjoying my grandchildren and doing woodworking again, as I mentioned, I built the stall house challenge last year. That was my first retirement challenge, and spent a lot of hours in my garage working on building the dollhouse. And I've already gotten orders now from my other grandchildren directing me what they want me to build when they found out about it. So my next one, I have to build a barn now. I'm going to building a barn.
See what happens, Stan, when you get good at something? There you go.
Well, you know, it's fun. I mean, I've always liked woodworking, so it's another thing, you know, to it. But I think a part of it is, you know, the challenges, as you say, they're different challenges. And, you know, for me, I mean, you know, people that I would like to be better at golf, I'd like to get healthier, I'd like to, you know, lose weight, all those fun things, get back into, you know, the mindset. Unfortunately, I think that's a male gene defect that we have, is that we still look in the mirror and see ourselves like we were when we were 30, and we ignore all the stuff where women look in the mirror and they see everything worse. Men have this rosy glass that we look through, but at any rate, yeah, I think the main challenges I look at going forward is just doing things to enjoy, and I enjoy mentoring people and sharing things with people. And so, yeah, it's just having the door open right now. It's nice to know that you can decide to go in different directions and follow paths or doors that open.
I'll enjoy the well-earned freedom, that's for sure. One last question for you. And when we talk about work becoming optional, two paths. Work becomes optional for someone, and yet they still like to continue to work, versus work is now optional for people because they've reached their financial goals or for whatever reason, and that they want to transition. What advice would you offer to someone listening in both those areas? They want to continue to work or they want to move on?
Well, the commonality of that is about passion. Again, I go back to that term all the time and probably overuse it, but if you're fortunate enough or blessed to be in a career that you are passionate about, that you care about, that really motivates you, you enjoy, and you get up every day and you're happy about getting up, going into the office or whatever it is that you're doing, that's great. And if, you know, you want to continue that, what happens, I find, and people have reached the stage of making work optional, is that they may do it, continue to do that, but they may do it at a reduced pace. That they still let themselves to do other things, but they continue to do the things that they want to do. That's, to me, has been always important for people. And so it gives you a little more flexibility. I mean, I go back to one of my clients many years ago. We chuckled about it. This guy, it was a single person, and he was in his 50s. He had done extremely well. It just happened to be a confirmed bachelor, I guess, and had sufficient assets. And he said, you know, what was really good about it is when he was in a, you know, major corporation, he said, you know, if they really irritate him, he knew he could leave at any moment. So he was much happier.
Yes.
But the idea is other people, I've got another friend of mine who's in the mediation world. He's, I think, 84 years old, and he's still doing it. He's amazing. He's an incredible individual and extremely talented and respected nationally. But I think it's just his DNA that's where his passion and desire is. And I think he'll probably do it till he drops, you know, or until he's unable. And he's just, but again, that's wonderful. Others who reach a point, like myself and others, who decide to go down a different path, if they want to change what they've been doing, either continue in a similar field or change it directly. People would, you know, become teachers. People become, you know, the volunteer force that we have out there. A lot of people I've enjoyed knowing who are volunteering in a whole variety of areas. Quick story, I guess I'll try to throw at the end here. One of my lady friends who outlived a couple of husbands, but she was 80 years old and she was still a candy striper at a hospital at 80. And I thought that was fantastic. She had 26 grandchildren. This is way back in the 90s. And she said, well, you know, I've got it back then. We went at a time when the for state taxes, the exemption was 600,000. So she had a more money she needed, and we talked about it. I said, well, why don't we start giving some of that money to your kids, grandkids, great-grandkids? So she wanted to do that. So December of a year, we sat down. It was limit was $10,000, so we wrote 26 $10,000 checks to distribute to the family, the kids and grandchildren. And we said, okay, at the end of January, contact said, oh, we're going to come back. Let's do another, you know, so you can get this money out of the estate. So we sat down with her, and she said, I said, you know, to help her write the checks. And she said, well, I'm only writing 19 checks. I said, why? She said, I only got 19 thank you notes. I said, fantastic. To me, you know, that's the cool, it's just fun stuff. You can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. But, I mean, some great advice. Follow your passion, and the passions will take you in the direction. And I think it's great. If you're passionate about work, continue to work. If not, you'll find your passion in other areas.
Always remember the thank you note.
Yes. Exactly. And always remember to write a thank you note.
Yes. That's what I did wrong. No, that's what I did wrong. That's a great story. Thanks. Joe?
Stan, thank you so much. It's been great to hear you. Your book is terrific. We got a lot out of it, and we look forward to continuing to follow your work.
Well, thank you all very much. Enjoyed the chat, and look forward to further conversations.
We appreciate Stan Corey joining us today. Dennis, what are your takeaways?
Yeah, thanks. Stan was great. I enjoyed hearing his perspective as a former financial planner on the importance of the emotional side of getting ready for retirement and as it complements and relates to the financial side. So I thought that was good to get his perspective on that. So three things. First thing was he talked about challenges and the challenges of retiring that he's seen in some of the people that he spoke to. And that he found that it could be more challenging, retirement can be more challenging, especially among people who are higher achievers. And he talked about things like, what is it that as you look at when you retire, your identity becomes an issue, who you are versus what you do, and the importance of really spending some time thinking about who you want to become as you go into that transition is an adjustment. The second thing is adjusting to life without a paycheck. So once again, I think Stan did a good job of contrasting the balance between the financial and the non-financial side. And the second thing that resonated with me was when we asked him about the things he saw on the non-financial side, he spoke about health and maintaining good health. And certainly there was challenges associated with that, depending on how you enter retirement. But health becomes an aspect of retirement that's real important. And then expectations. So what do you expect in retirement? And we've seen this in other areas too. We did some seminars last year where people spoke about what was on their mind. They talked about what they were expecting themselves. And then he did a good job of kind of making that relationship as to what the expectations were, especially in a marriage. Having a clear vision, having a good communication with your spouse, making sure that you really kind of understand that. And understanding what it is that you're really expecting in this next phase of your life, spending some time on that is pretty important. So that I think is great advice. The last thing that I found was this whole aspect of when work becomes optional, and you have different choices to make. You want to continue to work. If you're fortunate enough to reach a position where work becomes optional, you can continue to work or not continue to work or move on to something else. But the P word, passion. Stan was pretty clear about following your passion. If work continues to be a passion for you in one way, shape, or form, well, continue to follow that. That's great. And maybe you do it in a little different way, reduce time, et cetera. And we've talked about that. Or you face yourself into the next part of your stage of your life, or you find new passions. So his woodworking, his sailing were all examples of different passions that he was finding, and the challenges that presented itself to him as he was getting ready for retirement. But I think these were great ways to deal with the next stage of the life. So good advice on following your passions, Joe.
Great points, and I focused on three things. First one's similar to your last point, and that's around. When work becomes optional, it gives you freedom and more flexibility, and you can choose to continue perhaps what you were doing or pick up something new, but you also have more control over the pace. And that involves letting go, which is hard for a lot of us. Some things you like doing may need to let go to create that space for what's really most important to you, although you have a regulator and a governor on that. Second one that I really liked that jumped out to me was he talked about the transition as being a mind, body, and soul thing. And it also, I thought they got into some key areas because many people think of it as just a financial thing. or just a time thing, but it's really about the holistic approach to ourselves. And then finally, he emphasized that retirement's not one thing. There are stages, not ages, which I thought was a good way to put it. And that may play out over time differently for each person. There's a sequence of stages, but I might spend longer time in stage one or stage two than you might, for various reasons, some my intentions or some circumstances. So I thought that this feeling of it's different for everyone, but there's a standard framework was a useful way to think of it. But mind, body, and soul, I thought, was the number one thing for me. Great way that teased out that it's more about more than money.
Thanks for joining us today on The Retirement Conversation. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.